Chapter 44. There was cold that first night, and the stars were brilliant, clear, and very far away. In the morning the land lay white and brittle in the grip of frost. Each blade of grass, each twig, and fallen leaf transformed into a white-jewelled wonder. A thin scum of ice covered the pool beside which the column had camped. Imbijani and Sean squatted together. Imbijani with his monkey-skin kaross draped over his shoulders, and Sean with the sheepskin coat buttoned to the throat. "Tonight we'll camp below that mountain," Sean pointed away towards the west, at the blue cone that stood out against the lighter blue of the dawn sky. "You'll find us there." "Ngozi," Imbijani nodded over his snuff-box. "These others?" Sean pointed with his chin at the group of four natives, who waited quietly with the spears beside the pool. "Are they men?" Imbijani shrugged.
"I know little of them. The best of those I spoke with, perhaps. But they work for gold, and of their hearts I do not know."
Before going on, he regarded their clothing, tattered European cast-offs, which were everywhere replacing the traditional tribal costume.
"They dress without dignity, but beneath the rags it is possible that they are men."
"They are all we have, so we must use them. Yet I wish we had those others who now grow fat in the company of their women." Imbijani smiled. A week before he had put the message into the grapevine, and he knew that both Chlubi and Nonga were at that moment dissipating their accumulations of fat as they trotted north from their kraals along the Umfolozi River. They would be here soon. "This is the way we will hunt," Sean told him. "Your men will spread out ahead of us and search for sign. The horses of those we seek will carry no steel on their hooves. If you find it fresh, then follow it until the run and direction of it is clear. Then return to me in haste." Imbijani nodded and sniffed a pinch from his snuff-box. "While you search, stop at the kraals you find along the way. Speak with the people there, clearly. If the Mabuna are here, these people will know of it." "It will be as you say, Nkosi." "The sun comes." Sean looked up at the glow of it upon the high places, while the valleys were blue with shadow. "Go in peace, Imbijani." Imbijani folded his kaross and tied it with a strip of leather. He picked up his stabbing spear and slung the great oval war shield on his shoulder. "Go in peace, Nkosi." Sean watched while he talked with the other trackers, listening to the sonorous rise and fall of his voice. Then they scattered, trotting away into the veldt, dwindled, and were gone.
"Eccles? Sir. Finished breakfast? Ezra."
The men stood to their horses, blanket rolls and carbines on the saddles, slouch hats pulled well down, and the collars of their greatcoats turned up against the cold. Some were still eating with their bayonets from the cans of shredded beef.
"Well, let's go, then."
The column closed up, riding four abreast, the pack mules and the Scotch cart in the centre, the outriders fanning out ahead to screen the advance. It was a tiny command, not 150 paces long even with the pack animals, and Saul smiled as he remembered the massive 15-mile column that had marched from Colenso to Spion Kop. Yet it was enough to tickle his pride. Courtney's fighting scouts. The task now was to justify the second word of their title. Saul hooked one leg over the saddle, balanced his notebook upon it, and while they rode, he and Sean planned a thorough reorganization of the column. When they halted at midday, the planning was put into effect. A patrol of 10 men in charge of the mules. For this duty, Sean picked those who were fat, old, or ungainly in the saddle. These men would also act as horseholders when the unit went in to fight on foot. From among his sailors, Sean selected the gunners to captain the four Maxim teams. The riflemen were divided into patrols of 10, with the most likely men promoted sergeant patrol leaders, and their warrants noted in Saul's little book. It was well after nightfall when they off-saddled that night below the dark massif of the mountain. Imbijani was waiting with his men beside a small, well-screened fire.
"I see you, Imbijani. I see you, Nkosi."
In the firelight, Imbijani's legs were coated with dust to the knees, and his face was grey with fatigue.
"What news?"
"Old sign. Perhaps a week ago, many men camped over there below the river.
20 fires not in lines as the soldiers make them. They left no little tin pots as the soldiers do when they have emptied them of meat. No tents, but beds cut of grass. Many beds.
How many?
It was an idle question, for Imbujani could not count as a white man counts. He shrugged.
As many beds as there are men with us.
Sean sought a comparison.
More,
Imbujani thought carefully before answering. As many again? Sean persisted.
Perhaps as many again, but no more than that.
Probably 500 men, Sean guessed.
Which way were they moving? Imbujani pointed southwest. Back towards Freyheit and the protection of the Drakensberg mountain. Yes, it was part of the Weinberg commando, without doubt.
What news from the kraals?
There is fear among them. They tell little, and that of no importance.
Imbujani made no attempt to hide his disgust, the contempt that the Zulu feels for every other tribe in Africa.
You have done well, Imbujani. Rest now, for we ride before the dawn.
4 more days they moved southwest, Sean's trackers sweeping the ground 10 miles on each side of their path, and finding it empty. The Drakensberg reared up like a serrated back of a prehistoric monster along the south horizon. There was snow on the peaks. Sean exercised his men in the counters to a surprise attack, riflemen wheeling out and dismounting in line to cover the Maxims as they galloped wildly for the nearest high ground, holders gathering the loose horses and pelting away to the cover of the nearest donga or kopje. Again and again they repeated this manoeuvre. Sean worked them until they leaned forward in their saddles to nurse aching backsides and cursed him as they rode. He worked them to the edge of exhaustion, and then on to a new physical fitness. They sprouted beards, their faces reddened and peeled, then darkened with the sun. Their uniforms darkened also, but with dirt. Now they no longer cursed him. There was a new feeling among them. They laughed more and sat solid in the saddle, slept soundly at night despite the cold, and woke with eagerness. Sean was moderately satisfied. On the morning of the 10th day, Sean was scouting ahead of the column with 2 of his troopers. They had just dismounted to rest among an outcrop of boulders when Sean picked up movement out on the plain ahead. With a savage lift of anticipation, he scrambled down from the boulders on which he was sitting and ran to his horse for his binoculars.
"Damn it!" he mouthed his disappointment as he saw the lance blades glitter in the round, strangely foreshortened field of the glasses. "Cavalry!"
Half an hour later, they met the small patrol of lancers from one of the big columns that were driving south from the line of blockhouses. The young subaltern in command gave Sean a cigar and the latest news of the war. Deloray and Smuts were rampaging north of Johannesburg in the Machalisberg, with 40,000 men chasing their 3,000. South in the Free State, another of the great De Wet hunts was in full swing. But this time they would catch him, the subaltern assured Sean. 50,000 foot and horse had driven his commando into the angle between the blockhouse line and the flooded Riet River. In the east it was quieter. The commandos there lacked leadership and were lying up in the mountains around Komatipoort.
"So far it's quiet here also, sir. But I don't like the looks of it. This man Leroux is a nasty piece of work. Clever man, too. So far, he's limited his activities to a few raids. 10 days ago, about 500 of his men hit one of our supply columns near Charlestown, wiped out the guard, and collected enough ammunition to fight a full-scale battle, then made off towards the mountains."
"Yes," Sean nodded grimly. "We found one of his camps."
"No sign of him since then, sir. We've been scouring the ground for him, but so far without luck."
"What's his force?" Sean asked.
"He can muster 3,000, so they say. My guess is that he's getting himself poised for something really big."
That night Imbujani came into camp well after midnight. He came to where Sean slept under the Scotch cart, and with him were 2 other men.
"Inkosi."
Sean rolled on his side, instantly awake at the touch.
"Imbujan!"
He crawled out from under the cart and stood up. The moon was up, silver and round and bright. By its light he recognized the men with Imbujani and exclaimed with pleasure,
"By God! Klubi! Nonga!"
Then remembering his manners,
"I see you."
He stepped forward, grinning broadly, to clasp their shoulders in turn.
and each replied gravely as they returned his embrace.
I see you, Nkosi.
Are you well?
I am well. Are you well?
The catechism of Zulu greeting can be carried on for as long as there is time available. More than a year had passed since Sean had discharged them from his service outside Pretoria, and so Sean must ask each of them for news of his father, his brothers, his herds, and the journey they had made, before he could put his own question.
You came through Ladyburg?
We came that way, agreed Chluby.
You saw the Nkosana, Dirk?
For the first time they both smiled, white teeth in the moonlight.
We sat in council with the Nkosazana, Chluby chuckled. He grows like a bull calf. Already he wears scars of battle, honorable blackening of one of his eyes. He grows in wisdom also, Nonga boasted, saying aloud to us those things which are written in the book.
Chluby went on.
He sends greetings to the Nkosi, his father, and asks that he be allowed now to leave his school and join with him once more. For now he is skilled in the matter of books and numbers.
Sean laughed.
And what of the Nkosikazi, my mother? He asked. She is well. She sends you this book.
Chluby produced a travel-stained envelope from his loincloth. Sean tucked it away inside his coat to read it at leisure.
Now, the formula of greeting completed, Sean could come to the present. What news of Mabunu? Have you found sign?
Mbijani squatted on his haunches and laid his spear and shield beside him. The other followed his example. The meeting came to order.
Speak, Mbijani ordered Chluby.
We came through the mountains, this being the shorter way, Chluby explained. In the hills below the mountains we found the road made by many horses, and following it we came upon a level place surrounded by rock. The Mabunu are there with cattle and wagons.
How far is this place? Sean asked eagerly.
A day's long journey.
30 miles.
How many Mabunu?
Sean asked, and Mbijani explained.
As many as camped at the place I told you of.
It made sense, Sean decided. Jan Polis would have split his force into smaller units, for reasons of supply and concealment, until such time as he needed them.
We will go then, he said, and stood up.
Eccles worked quickly.
Sergeant Major, the guides have found a small Boer commando in lager below the mountains. Get the men mounted up.
Sir,
Eccles's moustache, rumpled with sleep, quivered like the whiskers of a hunting dog. While around him in the commotion of upsaddling began, Sean kicked life into the fire, and in its yellow flickering light he tore a page from his notebook and licked the point of a pencil. To all British troops in the field, I am in contact with a Boer commando of 500. Will attempt to contain them pending your arrival. The bearer will act as a guide. Signed, S. Courtney, Major. 5th of August, 1900. Time, 0.46 hours.
Chluby, he called.
Nkosi.
Take this book, he handed him the note. There are soldiers out there.
He swept his arm towards the north.
Give it to them.